Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. So from same-sex couples' freedom to marry to the freedom to brandish the Confederate flag, both issues have made it to the Supreme Court, and both have been defended by the ACLU. Here with us in Studio 3 to talk about these issues and others where our civil liberties could be compromised is Carol Rose. Carol's the executive director of the ACLU of Massachusetts. Carol, great to see you.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming in. So we know about so-called Obamacare, big decision by the Supreme Court, 6-2-3. Yeah. But you guys, the ACLU, you're co-counsel for the plaintiff couples in the gay marriage case,
right,
which we still don't know about. So what do you think?
Right, any day now. It's either going to be Friday or Monday,
yeah,
possibly Tuesday, most likely Friday or Monday. And
that's a hell of a prediction, Carol.
It's
either Friday or Monday or Tuesday.
But now what do you think about what day? Because we do kind of know that. But, I mean, we had 6-3 on Obamacare. Mm-hmm. We had Margaret Marshall in here, of course, was the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court in Massachusetts when gay marriage became the law of the land here. She predicted 7-2 possibly.
She said it could go to 7-2.
What do you think?
Oh, I think I'm really hopeful that we're going to have a victory. So the ACLU is counsel in two of the four cases,
yep,
that are up there. And it's either going to, there's three possible things that are going to happen. Either they're going to rule complete victory, in which case we're going to have equal marriage under the federal constitution, which would be fabulous. Or they might rule that you just have to recognize same-sex marriage from other states, which would be better than what we have now.
So if you're one of the 13 states that doesn't allow for it, and somebody from Massachusetts where it is allowed and
right,
was allowed first, you've got, and you move to one of those states, Arkansas, I think, is one of them. I'm not sure. You have to recognize that marriage that
right,
was done in a state where it is constitutionally and legally permissible.
That's right.
So, and what's the third option?
And the third is that they say the states get to decide, in which case we have to go state by state. But I'm pretty hopeful. I share Justice Marshall's optimism. I think that these justices don't want to go down writing the Dred Scott bad decision
exactly
of their generation.
No, that's exactly, they say,
yeah,
the first paragraph in their obituary is going to be on the wrong
side,
serious,
of
on the
history,
wrong side of history.
That's,
but you know,
right,
the conventional wisdom, which makes me really nervous, Carol Rose, is why every, I haven't heard one person predicting that it's not going to be in favor of a constitutional right to gay marriage, actually. And everybody,
right,
says the reason we believe that is the court would not have allowed gay marriages to continue in all these disputed states,
right,
if at some point down the line they were going to potentially undo them. What happens to the kids? What happens to the families?
Right.
All this. So do you buy that notion that that's an indicator in advance of where they're going?
I do think it is. I think the court was actually kind of hoping it would take a little longer, but I think the tide, the political tide in this country has been huge. I mean, more than 70% of the people in America live in states that are now same-sex equality states,
it's
right?
It's unbelievable.
It's wonderful. And
in 12 years.
And it started in Massachusetts, not just with the Goodrich decision, but with the two times that activists here pushed back DOMA in the state legislature, 2001 and again in 2007. And those were important milestones. So Massachusetts really led the way,
that's
for
right,
the whole country.
And
we're
by
very
the way, a friend
cutting
of yours
edge
and
here,
a former colleague of mine, Arlene Isaacson, has been at the center of that forever.
Arlene Isaacson is a hero
on
the gay marriage
she really
stuff,
is amazing.
No question.
So, okay, so you're in the perfect position on that. On the Confederate flag, Clarence Thomas is with the good guys, and you're with the bad guys. Is that a fair statement of where we are on the Confederate flag? Well, Clarence Thomas was the deciding vote to basically say it is fine for Texas not to allow the Confederate flag on the license plate. You are absolutist on free speech thing, the civil reason, right? Is that not
why? No. So what this comes down to is whether it's government speech or not. So, for example, the ACLU brought the case that said you can't fly a Confederate flag over the courthouse in Louisiana. You had to bring it down because it's intimidating from a due process perspective.
I see.
ACLU says in South Carolina, you've got to bring it down. It's a political speech, but that's government speech. What we argued in the Texas case was when they sell license plate, you know, make your license plate in basically into a billboard, right? And they sell it to these groups for money. The state isn't endorsing that. So if the state is actually creating a billboard or if same thing on a subway ad, then you can't have viewpoint discrimination. The court ruled that actually a license plate is government speech. And that means when you see those anti-abortion license plates in Massachusetts, that means the court is ruling that the state of Massachusetts is endorsing that. That means when the Texas legislature, there's a license plate in Texas that says Go Oklahoma football or something, that means the Texas government is endorsing the Oklahoma, their rival football team. So what the ACLU argued is that a license plate is not government speech. It actually is a public forum, so you can't have viewpoint discrimination. But what the court ruled is that, no, it's government speech. So it is like the South Carolina flag, and it's government speech, it should come down.
But that does seem rather ridiculous to have your football fanship on a license plate. I misunderstood it because I thought because you had to because of the government, have a license plate on your car so everybody knows who you are and right. all that kind of thing, and they can give you tickets and pull you over, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I just thought that that was from the government. But the idea that the football thing,
right? Well,
or
they
Jim's got the Free the Whales thing. You got that Free the Whales thing on
that's
your license plate.
It's my own business, Marjorie.
It's very
not
lovely.
Not anymore. Now it's a government's business. Now it's a government speech endorsing Save the Whales. You
but
know,
that
which
is ridiculous, isn't it?
Right. Well, that's the thing. So it's a really troubling dialogue.
Why is it ridiculous? I can't believe I'm saying the words. I'm with Clarence Thomas on this.
Okay, but what
I am. Could there be, I don't know, could there be a license plate issue with the issuance of a license plate without the imprimatur of a government? The answer is no, right?
That's not true.
Private sector can't issue license plates on cars.
Well, private sector actually buys these specialty license plates, right? Those are actually done by private, advocacy groups
that
want to do
it. Authorized by state law. They couldn't do this unless the state law allowed, if you get, 100 people agree to buy or whatever the law is in Massachusetts.
So here's the problem when you say that it's government speech, the license plate, the stuff on the license plate, and therefore it's not subject to the First Amendment scrutiny, okay? Because the government gets to say whatever it wants. That means the government could say you must vote Republican and put it on a license plate. Or the government could say everybody has to be a Christian and put it on a license plate. And it could not be subject to any kind of viewpoint control because it's just they could put a Confederate flag on it and say it's government speech. So the doctrine of government speech is actually quite troubling. And that's what the issue was, not the Confederate flag.
I'm totally confused,
Before we move off this, I mean, I'm stunned by this, that this could be allowed because to just a layperson like myself, it seems so clear that that's bizarre to have that sort of liberty to do those kinds of things on a license plate. So is there a history here?
But wait a second. They're saying in Texas you can't do that. The state can say that you can't.
Well, about the Confederate flag
correct.
Piece. But we have – everybody has Red Sox license plates. Everybody apparently in Oklahoma has Oklahoma Sooner license plates.
That's right. So, I mean, what this is saying is instead of it seeing like a billboard, if it's a billboard or a Subway ad, right, and it's open to people to buy it, for private entities to buy and put their sign up there for money, right, it's a money-making thing. Then the government can't discriminate based on viewpoint. But if it's, in fact, the government endorsing whatever the viewpoint is, then which is what the court ruled, then fine, the government gets to discriminate. But that means that the government is endorsing, the Sierra Club? The government is endorsing, the anti-abortion license plates? Is that, in fact, something the government is endorsing? Because that's what the court says it is. And there's no limits. Once you say it's government speech, they can say anything they want.
You're providing me a little wiggle room to move away from Clarence Thomas. I'm feeling a little bit better. Can we talk about something, Carol? Every time I see you, we have the same discussion. We're about to have it for the 400th time. When Ibrahim Todashev was shot and killed by the FBI in his apartment in Orlando, none of us had ever heard of him.
Right.
What we learned from the FBI shortly thereafter, according to them, is that he was about to sign a confession saying that he and the older Tsarnaev, Tamerlan Tsarnaev, had committed a triple murder in Waltham. And people may say, well, who cares? Well, the reason we care is because it was 19 months before the Marathon bombing.
Right.
If, in fact, Tsarnaev the elder and Todashev were responsible and law enforcement had gotten them, then one can make a pretty credible case there would not have been a Marathon bombing.
That's
so
right.
In any case, you and I think your colleagues in Florida, they went to the state's attorney. You went to Martha Coakley, the attorney general of Massachusetts, and said, please investigate. Your argument being there were two state troopers in the room. We want to know what's going on. She refused to do that, saying she didn't have jurisdiction. First question is, have you pursued that at all with her successor, Mara Healey, who at least to me initially seemed more open to the notion, the argument being, who else can investigate? It was our tax dollars at work in Florida. We want to know the truth.
Well, our argument is that the jurisdiction for the attorney general to investigate goes wherever the police officers go.
Right.
So if there are state troopers down there, the jurisdiction falls with the state troopers. We have talked to Mara Healey about doing independent investigations whenever there are police-involved shootings or killings, because we think there needs to be independent investigations in all of these instances, including the Todashev case, but also in the more recent ones that have taken place.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that in a minute.
That's a really important thing to have in order to sort of restore public trust in the process, in particular when police are exonerated. You want to make sure you have an independent investigation. And I think that it would be great to see the investigation going on of the Todashev shootings. You know, the FBI has investigated itself 151 times, and it's exonerated itself 151 times. So,
by Charlie Savage in the New York Times a year or so ago came up with that is stunning.
Right, and even if those were legitimately, exonerations, because it's the agency investigating itself, the public doesn't trust it.
You know, speaking of the Tartishoff and the Tsarnaev case, because, of course, people think that the older brother, Tamerlan Tsarnaev, might have been involved in that triple murder. When we thought he might possibly, Zhohar Tsarnaev, be sentenced to life in prison instead of the death penalty, there was a big piece about this supermax prison out in Colorado, where people are routinely, not as kind of a short-term punishment thing, but basically routinely held in solitary confinement for 23 or 24 hours. It was a New York Times magazine piece, and it talked about how you get your food through this little slot in the door, a little tiny window 3 inches wide. Everything is in there, the toilet, the sink, so forth. And I read that piece and I thought to myself, how can this be not cruel and unusual punishment? How can we do this? Not as a temporary thing if you
act
beat
out.
Up a, gu- right, a guard right. or kill somebody or something, but for the rest of your life.
Right. I think your instincts are right. And it goes to this notion that we have in American criminal justice right now, which is more punitive than restorative. That, in other words, we want to just punish the bad guys all the time. But the problem, especially because when people are in solitary for years or months at a time in places like Rikers Island and even in the prisons around Massachusetts, they get put in the segregation unit and it makes people go mad.
80,000 people every single day in America in solitary in some
jurisdiction. And the Rikers Island, as we know, we'll get to that in a second, sometimes they are underage, 16, 17, 18.
Right, exactly. So I think in terms of why, a lot of people have tried to bring a cruel and unusual Eighth Amendment claim, and so far they haven't succeeded. But I think, these things are never fully won. I mean, we brought the first equal marriage case, the ACLU, in 1970, and now we're going to finally have a victory, right? It takes the evolution of our civilization, advancement of our civilization to win some of these freedoms. So I think that the next challenge on the solitary, on the segregation stuff, is likely to come out of the Rikers Island in similar situations with juveniles. So that's likely to be where the law reform.
Well, why don't we talk about the Rikers Island in case people didn't know about this? We talked about this last week, that a young man from the Bronx walking down the street on Arthur Avenue in the Bronx gets picked up for allegedly stealing a backpack. He claims he never stole the backpack. He was 16 at the time, poor kid. Mom had no money, had done a previous joyride, and so they revoked his. I think they set the bail at $3,000, and then they revoked the bail because he violated probation. Anyway, he gets into Rikers Island. And he's at this young age, he's in solitary confinement for a good chunk of his time
and
there.
By the way, never convicted.
Never convicted and maintained his innocence right to the end. And we don't even get into the fact that he was in jail for 3 years for something he said he didn't even do because of the backlog in the courts, which is another disgraceful thing, which seems to be anti-constitutional as well.
It is.
But that was incredible that a teenager, pre-trial, no conviction, is in solitary confinement.
Right. And then
I don't get how these cases lose.
I don't either, but they do. And a lot of it is because it's really, really tough when you go in front of a judge and then people from the correction system come in and say, we need this tool to try to keep the peace and we have a tough job. So it needs to be a deeper reform than just, we need to challenge those as a constitutional matter, but we also need to have a complete look at how we treat people, because the vast majority of people come out of prison,
right?
They don't stay forever. So if you have mistreated them and locked them up in solitary and otherwise really exacerbated whatever mental health issues they might have had, it's a public safety issue that we should be working on reform and giving people an opportunity to come out and become productive citizens rather than punishing them and having this punitive approach that actually makes it much more difficult for them to be successful. And therefore, they have no alternative but a life of crime.
You know, Carol Rose, I'm rarely optimistic about anything when it comes to the Supreme Court. But obviously, it was a good morning for those who believe in the Affordable Care Act. But in addition to that, the Supreme Court, even a conservative-leaning Supreme Court like this on things like the death penalty relating to solitary confinement, has moved in a more humane direction. We're still the only civilized country that has death penalty. But when it comes to juveniles, when it comes to people who are mentally deficient, that sort of thing, they have ruled on the humane side of things. So it's not preposterous to think that while they haven't been ready for this Eighth Amendment argument that you and Marjorie were talking about on solitary confinement, that
it will come.
It will come.
And I think there is an evolution. And justices are subject to the political pressures just like the rest of us. I mean, they don't operate in a vacuum. It kind of seems like they do sometimes. But really, they are part of the political landscape.
Of course they are.
And therefore, the public education, the importance of movement building, around civil rights and civil liberties is actually tremendously important, not only in its own right, but also in the sense that it affects the courts and how the judges will rule over time.
You know, Marjorie jumped the gun because she's solitary confinement obsessed. I am
Totoshev
and Tsarnaev obsessed.
Sorry.
Can we get back to this just for one more second? Mm-hmm. We were talking to Maura Healey, the Attorney General, about this again the other day. Every time she's been here, we've asked her about a piece of this.
Good.
She told us last month something that was very surprising to me, that she couldn't get involved yet, even mm-hmm. if she would, in some investigation, because the Middlesex County DA was still investigating the triple murder in Waltham. And
right.
we said to her at that time, it was about 5 weeks ago, what are they investigating? The two people whom the FBI say committed the murders are both dead. What's to investigate? Well, I don't know, et cetera. We asked her again the other day.
Right.
What's going on? Are you making any progress? Why are they still investigating? Here's what the Attorney General said to us.
And you mentioned two. I'm not sure that it was limited to two suspects. So, you know, that's something
there are intimations that there were people other than Totoshev and Tsarnaev who were responsible for the three killings?
That's my understanding. That's the basis for the continued look.
Now, when other reporters went there afterwards, she said, speak to the Middlesex County DA. The Middlesex County DA, through Marion Ryan, that's her office, said, we're in the midst of an investigation. That's all we're going to tell you. Were you surprised, as I was, to hear that there may be a non-Tamerlan Tsarnaev, non-Ibrahim Totoshev suspect in this triple murder?
Well, you know, this whole story just gets curiouser and curiouser, doesn't it? You know, we have so many questions. Why, if they knew Tamerlan Tsarnaev, they were tracking him before the Boston Marathon bombing. Why hadn't they linked him to this murder? And then suddenly, you know, within 48 hours after the Boston Marathon bombing, suddenly, oh, we found the guy who did the triple homicide. It's not clear what then the connection was with Totoshev. And everybody who knew Totoshev down in Florida, including his girlfriend, got deported for talking to the media. So they kind of disappeared, everybody. Now, out of the blue, there's a new mystery person. So this whole thing just raises all sorts of questions and suspicions, and it really raises a lot of concerns. There's so many conspiracy theories flying around about it, because when you don't have transparency and you don't have clarity from the government, people will make up things that may be far worse than what the reality is, but we need some sunlight on this.
Let me tell you, there is not a topic that we do in the studio where Marjorie does not figure out how to insert a lack of government transparency into a conversation.
Good,
so she's smiling big time. So, but let me stay on this, and then Marjorie will take that train and ride it or whatever. So we're basically, as long as the Middlesex County DA says we're investigating this case, we will continue to have no idea what went on, why, what law enforcement did, why, despite the fact that Tamerlan Tsarnaev was known to be the best friend of one of the victims and
right.
did not come to the funeral,
right.
that nobody questioned him from law enforcement
exactly
as to
right.
why he didn't come to the funeral or what his connection might have been. So theoretically, we could all be dead and still
Absolutely.
Not know what happened in Waltham and why Tamerlan Tsarnaev, if he was responsible, wasn't pursued by law enforcement, potentially avoiding the nightmare of the marathon.
Exactly. And not only is this like terrible in terms of how, I mean, this goes to our very broken public records law and why we need to pass a law to fix it, but it also goes to this notion of trust in the government, right? People aren't going to trust the government when the story keeps yeah. shifting and the story keeps changing and new answers and new excuses come up, and yet they don't tell you what's really happening. And that's bad for public safety. Not only bad for civil liberties and bad for democracy, it's bad for public safety.
We're talking with Carol Rose, Executive Director of the ACLU of Massachusetts. There are so many places where the government is not releasing the information they should, and
she
where
goes.
People are
yeah.
distrusting the government. And we just saw the disgrace that we couldn't even go into the Tsarnaev trial, not to mention the Whitey Bulger trial. But I don't want to get sidetracked, because there is another issue that we've talked about a lot in the wake of the police shootings of unarmed black men. And we just saw this in Boston. This was, according to the police, an armed black man, Usama Rahim, that was shot and killed. But many people have pointed out, including Joan Vernocchi in The Globe, that once again, we have the district attorney of Suffolk County investigating the cops. And she pointed out, we talked about in the FBI, how the FBI, I think it's 154 times they've
right.
investigated themselves, and
right.
154 times they've found that they were absolutely right in what they did. Well, it's very similar in police shootings. Over the past 12 years, according to Vernocchi, police killed 73 people across Massachusetts, and every investigation found they were justified in using deadly force. The investigations were carried on by the district attorneys, with whom they worked very closely. So again, I'm wondering, wow, this is nothing new, and there's no thought, generally speaking, that we have to get these investigations away from the people that are working with the cops every single day and have an independent prosecutor?
Well, I think there are a couple bills that are pending. Senator Pat Jalin has a bill in the state legislature. I think Carvalho has a bill. So there are a couple of different versions that would require independent investigations. And these are a good idea for a couple of reasons. One, it's really good for the DAs. I mean, look, the DAs, over time, we want the DAs to actually be able to work with the police to do their investigations, right? We want them to have a good collaborative relationship. The danger isn't just that, you know, maybe the DAs won't investigate themselves or investigate the police because they're cozy. That may be the public perception, maybe sometimes the reality. The real danger is when they do find that somebody's done something wrong, and then the police refuse to work with them anymore, right? You get these kind of shutdowns. There's been in Arizona and New Mexico. I think that happened in New York. So part of the problem is we want our DAs to be effective. We want our DAs to be able to work effectively with the police in investigations. So we need independent agencies, independent bodies to come in and do these investigations, both especially when they exonerate the police, because then otherwise the public dismisses the findings and says, well, they just investigated themselves. So nobody
believes
it. Is
there any place in America where this is going on, where there is a separation between the local DA and the local cops? Where?
Yeah, actually, Wisconsin just passed a law about this, and so that might be a model that we could look to. And there's a bill pending also in California. And so I think that there are examples that we could look to and see how it's working. But it's certainly, again, why can't Massachusetts be on the cutting edge of doing it right and putting in some basic checks and balances, especially because we have bills pending. All we need to
do is
pass them.
Well, there is a theory.
Yeah.
This guy that worked at the Miami Herald for years, a reporter, said that down in Florida, there's a lot of big Tea Party people, very suspicious of the government. In Massachusetts, we're all a bunch of patsies. We're too trusting of the government, led by people like Jim Browdy over here, a big government guy.
And that's what I think, Jim Browdy, big government guy.
I am the obstacle to transparency.
Exactly. We need more suspicious people in Massachusetts of the government.
I had no idea, John.
Carol, it's great to see you.
Great, thank you. It's really fun to be here. Thanks for making this public conversation happen.
Thank you very much, Carol Rose, who is executive director of the ACLU of Massachusetts. Thank you, Carol, again. Coming up, yes, we are wading into our first book club conversation, curated by the literary tastemaker Alex Beam of the Boston Globe. Barefoot by Erin Hildebrand is next on 89.7 WGBH. Please join us.